Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the 2017 Home Education Conference, held in Williamsburg, Virginia.
David Softley, this is Minutes and Moments. I am very proud to announce that I am a brand new father. This is my newest addition to the Softley clan. This is little Hiram. He was born on May 1st. It's been a joy having him in our family. He is number 7, so we have 7 children, which I know is more than some and less than others, and in fact, in this particular crowd, feels like an underachiever, but I think we're doing just great. It's been wonderful. It's been an interesting time as I have been Mr. Mom for the last couple weeks, but it's been great because I've been able to spend more time with my children. And one of the big challenges with dads and stuff is you tend to go out to work and you get less time with your children. So it's been really a fantastic time for me with this new baby. My current employer is pretty generous with paternity, so I get a pretty good chunk of time away from work that I can spend with my family and really get to know exactly what's going on in our homeschool and be more involved in it. Let me ask a question about the folks in the room here. Who in the room here has more than 5 children? So I know, okay. And I know some of you, and I know some of your children. How many people here, of the dads in the room, how many of them work outside of the home? Fairly common. Traditional work schedules, kind of 8-ish to 5-ish. Not traditional. What kind of hours do you do? Maybe you travel a lot? Or
airline pilot.
Airline pilots. Not traditional. Okay, very good. I just want to testify that it's great to be a dad. You know, we heard in Brother Blackwell's class about the divine design. We know about the Family Proclamation that talks about dads are to preside and protect. And I just want to testify that there's great power in dads, and it doesn't take away from moms that there's great power in dads. There's a lot of research that I was looking up about this class here. Just a couple of things here. Here's a 6-year study that says the number one factor in developing empathy in children was father involvement. Father spending regular time alone with their children translated into children who became compassionate as adults. Here's another one. And again, none of this takes away from mothers, but it does help to emphasize how there is a great power in the tag team that happens between moms and dads. Here's another one. I like this one because it says, a father's more active playstyle and comparatively slower response to a toddler or infant experiencing frustration serve to promote problem-solving competencies and independence. Now, if you've ever been the slow dad to respond to a cry and your wife has said, you need to get over there, look at this. It says that that's actually a positive thing, that you respond slower. This is science here. This is from a researcher, a psychiatrist, Kyle Pruitt. And then one more. Children who feel a closeness and warmth with their father are twice as likely to enter college, 75% less likely to have a child in their teens, 80% less likely to be incarcerated, and half as likely to show various signs of depression. There is great power in dads. This is especially for dads class, and I hope I don't come across that it's not about moms, because I only know about being a dad because that's what I am. And I want to celebrate dads just real quick here with a quick video. And maybe some of you have seen this before, but it doesn't matter if you have or not, because it's pretty fun. Let's see if I can play this.
Oh! You awake?
Yeah, of course I'm awake. Is that a new mask?
Oh, yeah.
I love it. It's really creepy.
I know, right?
Yeah, good stuff.
Thanks.
Hey, let me introduce myself. My name is, and proud of it, and all dads should be.
Dad!
Why? You know why. Kids think we're awesome. We get our hands messy. We tell hilarious jokes. Hey, Nolan, we gotta get up, buddy. We never say no to dress up. We build the best forts. We do work, and we do homework. We lead by example. We blow their minds.
I can't believe he's his father.
I know. That is called a plot twist. Being awesome isn't about breaking rules. It's about making them. Hot stuff coming through. Wife and the coffee. And breakfast, is for breakfast. Hey, Nolan, give me a look here. Suggestion, that's a boy, that's a man. But it's also for lunch, dinner, and midnight snacks. Straight me's aren't boo-boos, they are badges of bravery on the playground. Hey, Victoria, that profile pic? Awesome. When you're a dad, hugs can be bear hugs, but they can also be high fives, fist bumps, and next-level handshakes. Kids, they're our best friends. They're our greatest fans. Buddy, you've been gaining muscle mass. Nice. And they look to us like the same way we look at superheroes. Up, because we're taller. Now, dadhood isn't always easy. When a rule is broken, we're the enforcement. Hey, buddy, it's garbage day. But when a heart is broken, we're the reinforcement. And we wouldn't have it any other way. Because being a dad is awesome. Just like new peanut butter Cheerios are awesome. That's why it's the official cereal of dadhood. And this? This, my friends? You know you gotta get some, baby, now. This is how to dad.
Okay. I was not paid by General Mills to share that video. But I do think it is pretty interesting, sort of celebrating the concept of dad. There's actually many things in there. I have never actually tried peanut butter Cheerios, more of a multi-grain Cheerio kind of guy. I'm sure they're very peanut buttery and fantastic, but I think it's great to be a dad. I'm glad to be a dad. I'm grateful that we have the opportunity here to talk about dads and homeschools in particular. And maybe some of you saw yourselves in that video, perhaps a little bit. Maybe not the how to dad. I just think that's pretty funny. We live in a different time. I was born in the 70s. And we've got all these hashtags going around, hashtag this, hashtag that. There's a couple things that I thought was interesting. In the book, there's a page there that has some what I called hashtag how not to dad, and just some comments about their fathers from different folks. This one's from Natalie Portman. Natalie Portman is in a variety of movies. My dad's a doctor. When I was 8, I went to one of his medical conferences where they were demonstrating laser surgery on a chicken. I was so mad that the chicken had to die and never ate meat again. Probably not the outcome the dad was thinking of, the bring your daughter to work kind of thing. Unintended consequences, I think, come with the territory of parenting. You think you're doing one thing, maybe you think you're helping, and it goes sideways and something very different happens. This is another one from Venus Williams. Venus Williams, a tennis star, referring to tennis. It wasn't like I was self-motivated. My dad started me. It was his dream before it was mine. Interesting. The idea of the father sort of pushing the child. Right? It was his dream that she be amazing at tennis before she adopted it and maybe realized how good she could be at tennis. This is the last one from Mitt Romney. My mom and dad gave their kids the greatest gift of all, the gift of unconditional love. They cared deeply about who we would be and much less about what we would do. I like that. To me, that is a good example of setting priorities about what exactly are we trying to accomplish in being a dad here. I'm going to talk about minutes and moments today. Before I get to that, let me just share with you a scripture here when I talk about fathers. One of my favorite scriptures is Moses 139. And in Moses 139, we learn about what the focus is of our Heavenly Father. And His focus is entirely on His children. For behold, this is my work and my glory to bring to pass the immortality and eternal life of man. That's where the glory comes from. That's where all the work is into, is how do I exalt and take my children from here to there. And I think as parents, that is our focus too. I care less if my children are smarter than me. In fact, I want them to be smarter than me. Sometimes they try to use me as a reason why they are allowed to do things. Like, Dad, you said that, you did that. To which I respond, don't be me, you have to be better than me. Right? Be better than me. And I think that's one of the goals of parenting. One of the challenges of parenting, I think, is there are restrictions, there are constraints in our time. What do you think is, let's do a quick survey here. What's the biggest, single biggest challenge to a homeschool father? What would you say?
Not being home.
Not being there. Okay. What did you say? Cell phone?
Yeah.
Cell phone. Oh, as in my children have cell phones or want cell phones?
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. We could have a whole class on exactly when is the right time to have that conversation. What about time? Right? If you're gone, you're flying around the world, you get back, you're tired. In the class before, Brother Blackwell said one of the things that he encouraged dads to do is bring energy home. Mom has been expending energy all day long. She needs you to bring it when you arrive home. I think of time as one of the biggest challenges here. If you look at this is a Venn diagram. It's basically intended to show where two or more concepts interact or intersect. And what I'm going to talk today is about minutes and moments, and thinking of these as minutes being quantity. So actual time spent reading, it's time off the clock. It's time being there. And then moments, I'm going to refer to moments as being more of the quality. So you can see the sweet spot here is where you get those two things together, where you have quality time. And that can be a challenge, and that actually represents, you know, the smaller thing, because time is a challenge for homeschool fathers and for homeschool parents just generally. For dads, I know for me, it's if I come home, I'm tired. There are things I need to do, and as soon as I walk in the door, demands are being made of me that have nothing to do with what I actually feel like I need to get done now that I've spent the entire day working. And I just want to get something to eat, and maybe I want to take a nap, or maybe I want to do any number of other things. So when we talk about these things, minutes and moments, I'm talking about quantity and quality, and specifically I want to talk about how can we magnify the minutes, how can we magnify the moments. Some days you won't have minutes, and you're going to have to rely on what you do have and making it the best quality that you can make it. How can you take just a snapshot of time and make it into a memory, something that lingers and lasts for much longer than it actually occurred for? But then also I'm going to share with you some things about how do we magnify the minutes? How do we actually create more time? I don't have a time machine, but there are ways that we can create more time. And so one disclaimer I just want to share with you is this is from my experience. This is from talking to other parents, other homeschool families, from what I have personally tried to do and in some cases failed to do. And I want to share with you five ways that we can magnify. And the goal here is so that we can become a better partner with our spouse and also a better parent to our children. So magnification, if you recall from your science classes, is the process of bending light, right? You redirect light through a surface, a concave or convex surface, in order to magnify. To do these things, it might require you to bend, to change what you're doing. In order to magnify, you have to bend the light. And if you want to magnify the minutes or the moments that you have, then you might need to make some changes. So I would hope that the Spirit will be here, so regardless of what I say, something gets through to you and that you have an opportunity to improve your family and your homeschool. So the first thing I want to talk about is one way that we can magnify time. And I brought something here. I brought something all the way from Charlotte, North Carolina, so I could throw it away when I got here. And it's this right here. This is our VCR that no longer works. How many people still have a VCR in their house? Okay. These were invented in the 50s, commercialized in the 60s, and you start seeing them in your homes in the 70s. I grew up with a VCR. My earliest memories are of my father renting movies, and you could rent a VCR from the video store. Video store, we all know, old concept, doesn't even exist anymore. We would binge watch movies because it was such a treat to have a VCR. He'd rent the VCR and rent way more movies than we had time to actually watch. He'd come home with 10 movies and because it was a rare thing. This changed a lot of things, this VCR here. Specifically, one of the things that the VCR has introduced was the concept of time shifting. Your ability to put a cassette into the VCR, record something that was playing in a linear, it's on at this time, and then to take it and watch it at your leisure, right? Introduce this idea of time shifting. Advertisers hated it. okay? But that concept still exists today, but it's been magnified so much so because of technology and because of things like social media. So one of the ways that you can use technology to magnify minutes is because time doesn't have to be linear when you have technology. Yes, the clock is still going to tick. The day will still be linear. It's going to be 1 o'clock two times during the day, and that's going to still happen. But the time that you have available with your children does not have to be linear because of technology. So that's the first way. I lived in Las Vegas for a number of years, and at the time I was working as a television director for NBC, and the shift that I had was more of a swing shift. So I had actually majority of the day to spend with my very young children, and I thought it was fantastic because I got to have time, and I was there, and I didn't have any other pressing concerns. So I spent a lot of time in that sweet spot. I do quality time with my kids. I would go to work about 3 o'clock. So I missed 3 to 7 when they went to bed. So I only missed 4 hours of their day. And then they went to bed and I came home around midnight. But what was going to happen when my kids got older? That particular shift that I was working would be terrible if my kids started going to school at the regular time. They would be at school 7. We'd be two ships passing in the night. We would not see each other. I would see them first thing in the morning, and I would see them by going into their room and watching them sleep at night. It was going to be a significant problem. And perhaps some of you have experienced that, where you just, the time element is not there. So when we think about technology and thinking about cell phones, cell phones are a blessing and a curse, right? A cell phone, if you think about a cell phone today, one of the differences between homeschool and public school is that your children are actually accessible during the day. If they were to take a cell phone into a public school, you can't call them in the middle of class and talk to them. So one of the advantages with homeschool is you do have a lot more flexibility. You can customize things, and your children are accessible. So that idea of, I've got a chunk of time, I'm at work, they're at school, we cannot connect, that doesn't exist with technology and with the idea of homeschooling. You can customize that, and you can make things happen. But let me give you some examples here of how we have, in my family, used technology to create more time. One of the problems with time is that you have to have things line up. And when I'm working, if I have downtime at work, that may not line up with my kids maybe at a piano lesson or something. So one of the things that we do is, I have a daughter that really does not like math. Maybe you have a child that doesn't like math. I happen to love math. And she will text me the problem with her question. And I will, when I have time, I will go into a room where I have a whiteboard, and I will annotate the question and how to approach the question and how to get to, I won't give her the answer, but I will guide her to get the answer, and I will text that back to her. And she will use that whenever she can access to it. So just like that, we kind of created an opportunity where we can shift time. I respond when I have the time available, right? She responds. She can respond back to me when she has time available based on what she's doing. We don't have to be perfectly lined up because the technology allows us to shift that around. There's a great book called The Mormon Way of Doing Business by Jeff Bennett. Has anyone read that book? It talks about some of these great big power brokers in business. Think guys like David Neeleman, who was the founder of JetBlue, Kevin Rollins, who was a former CEO of Dell, Clayton Christensen, the Harvard professor. He wrote the book, The Power of Everyday Missionary, Innovator's Dilemma, a lot of good stuff. Dave Checkitz, Gary Crittenden. These folks, in the book, he talks about the Mormon way of doing business, but these folks all had really time-consuming callings in church. Many of them were stake presidents. And one of the things that comes out in the books is, how did they manage their family? How did they manage their work? How did they manage their callings? And the thing that they used to make it possible was technology. They would do temple recommend interviews over Skype, because geography is often one of the big limitations with time. I got to commute. I got to get from A to B. We spend a lot of time covering ground just geographically. They would use Skype or FaceTime. You can also record those things, right? When you have time, you have dead time commuting, you can record something, a message, to your children, and that can be played back when the time is available. So you created it even though at that moment, as the clock is ticking through the day, you're not connected. But you can use technology to bridge that. So this is just a couple examples of recording messages. Obviously, you know, you can take a phone call during the day with your children if they have issues, and dads can be available. And now, obviously, that if you're on a plane, if you're flying over the Pacific Ocean, I don't know if you can have phone calls. Can they do that? Can you take a phone call in the cockpit?
It's financially prohibitive.
It's financially prohibitive. It's possible.
When I was in the military, we could do it via a different system, but in the airlines, no. You can talk to company, and company can get a hold of you in case of emergency.
Mm-hmm.
No, you don't just chat.
So you could use this idea of technology time shifting, because when you're in the air, you are unavailable. There is no actual time that I can get a hold of you. But you can do things before, package it up, and make it available while you're in the air.
Yeah,
right?
Hours off. So, you know, circadian rhythm, what have you, big ball in the sky we call the sun. I've got availability where they're asleep and vice versa.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great example of how the geography impacts that, right? You're actually on another part of the planet where it's nighttime, and your family is where it's day. So are there any thoughts on this? What are some ways you've actually used technology to get around this idea of not being available, not having enough time? So you mentioned one. Has anyone used that?
Mm-hmm. And he could say goodnight to him. Read him a story.
Okay.
Before my husband's deployment, he recorded a book on himself reading a book on CD, and so they could follow along with the book and listen to him reading.
Isn't that fantastic? So they could listen to that over and over and over again. They could get hours of dad time, if you will, but dad's somewhere else on the planet. I like that book. We did a book on CD years ago with my kids, and it was a hit. They still love listening to it. We put in sound effects, and for the page-turning sound, we took our youngest and we poked her tummy so she would giggle. That was our page-turning sound. We packaged it up as a Christmas present to the family for that one year. All right. So the first one here that I want to suggest is using technology to shift time, to literally not only align time to be more favorable to us, but we can actually make more time available, because what we just heard, right? You can record video, you can record audio, and that can be available at any time. It doesn't have to be just a linear delivery of you talking to your child or you interacting with your child. And the same goes with any parent, really. Now, the second way that I want to suggest to you is to be specific. If you have limited time, you need to maximize whatever you have. This is where we kind of cross over to what I'm calling moments, which are, okay, my value of my moment is not dependent on time. It may be amplified if there is time associated with it, but I can still have value. One of the ways we can do this is by being specific. And by be specific, I mean make it personal. And a couple ways that you've probably experienced this, family prayer. If you make the time to have family prayer, family prayer can be one of those times where you are just sitting there, everyone gathers around, something is said, no one remembers anything about what is said, and then you go off. And that time was spent. What was the quality of it? Can we make it more quality if we make the prayer personal by being specific, by calling out each of our children by name and specifically mentioning them, something about them, praying for them in front of everybody else? Now what we've done is we've upped the game. We've taken that time and we've added value to it. And we've made that something that is memorable. Be specific. This next one is, I struggle with this one, in listening and remembering. Think about something is said in passing, right? You say something in passing. Let's say you've done this. This happened. My wife is much better at remembering than I am. I say something in passing and she delivers a day later, whatever it is, 2 weeks later, it could be a Christmas present. I remember you said that, right? Think of how you felt when you have been on the receiving end of that, when somebody says, I remember you liked this or you liked that. And maybe it was only one time it was said. You can make it personal and be specific by remembering, taking a comment, remembering and bringing it back to say to your children, hey, I heard you. I know you, I understand you, I heard you. It was important to me. And for me, I would have to write it down and write it down if necessary. The third one here with being specific is with praise. Who doesn't like to receive praise? Anybody? Everybody likes to receive praise. Everyone likes to be told, good job, well done. Think about the phrase, good job. Maybe you add a little thumb up to it, two double thumb up if you really want to emphasize, hey, good job. That doesn't take any time, right, to say that. How can we make that, how can we punch that up? How can we make that a moment that becomes memorable? It's not going to take a whole lot of time to praise our children. But if we are specific about how we do it, if we don't just say, hey, good job, right? We could say, Aaron, that was fantastic. I loved how you did, and call something out specific. You're getting so much better at this. I remember, it doesn't take a whole lot of time, but you can amplify the value of that time by being specific with your child. You can magnify that and make it a moment that has impact, okay? The time may be this, but the impact may be this because you chose to be specific. So that's a way that we can magnify a moment where we can transcend the amount of time that's used and make that something that really sticks in their mind, all because we chose to be specific. We chose to make it personal. Perhaps you've had some experiences with this. How have you tried to make things specific or personal in your house? Anyone want to share?
Uh-huh. But behavior, and there's, you know, a lot of studies back it up, really drastically improves. As parents, we often want to be like, oh, they're playing quietly, let's just tiptoe past so they don't try to get our attention. But like, that's when you're supposed to say, oh, I noticed you're playing quietly with this, and tell me what you're doing here, and just noticing, and you can, of course, add praise to that as well, but kids just love that. It makes them feel so important that you're just noticing.
Noticing is so important because though your kids are probably all different, there are some things that are universal across humanity, right? We want to be seen and heard. We want to be valued by other folks. And sometimes that's just, I saw you, right? I saw that and I appreciated that. Yes?
This goes along with your technology too and time shifting. My husband travels and my girls, when they were younger, they would kind of hide little things in his suitcase when he left.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of times,
a time release.
They're little stuffies, you know, they're little stuffed animals. And he would make a point to take those little items and put them somewhere where he was and take a picture. So if he was in New York, he'd take a picture of it overlooking the city or wherever he was, and he would send them those pictures. And specifically, they got to see their present to him being used by.
Yeah, and that's a great example, right? Taking, and it's kind of in reverse. I'm gonna do a time release issue with my dad to let him know and have that be. But then the reciprocating of taking the photos is fantastic. I think there was another hand over here. No? Okay.
I just was thinking about the book Little Men, where you know, one of the main characters that takes care of the boys.
Mm-hmm.
Every Sunday, she brought out her book one at a time. You know, they would come in and she would read to them all the little things that she noticed during the week that they did. You know, it was, they had already forgotten. You know, I saw this. She just tried to notice something to record about them every week. And then, you know, they might, well, didn't you see when, they started looking so forward to it. Did you see when I did this, you know?
Yeah.
And she's like, I should add that in. And it made them feel like someone's paying attention to all these things and I'm trying to be good, you know?
Yeah. It's got great power. Making things personal, making it specific, showing people, hey, I see you, I value you, has such a tremendous impact. And that amount of time that's spent gets amplified because it'll linger in their mind. They will remember that. And they will know that you know them, you think of them, you remember when they, you know, they like a certain something a little way. And when you deliver that to them, it's another way of reinforcing, hey, I heard you, I know you. It's really quite powerful. This next thing I want to talk about is being different. Now, this is not for the sake of just being different and random, but this is being different in a way that is related to being specific. All of our children are different, right? And so it is difficult to take a one-size-fits-all concept and apply it to all of your children. We want to be specific in how we address them and how we deliver for them, but we also want to be different because one of the great advantages that I've learned about homeschool is that the value of customization. I confess, when my wife first floated the homeschool idea, I rattled off all of the standard objections to homeschool because I knew I didn't know anything. But after reading some books and talking to meeting some families at homeschooled, I got enlightened. And one of the things that really stood out for me was this idea of customizing to our specific children. So one of the ways that we can magnify the time that we have or the moments that we have with them is by being different. Now, it doesn't mean that you're always changing and that you never have any traditions, but make the traditions yours. Make them yours. Make them specific, right? And make them as different as you can. I'll give you some examples from my family here. Bedtime stories. Well, before I tell you about bedtime stories, I got to tell you a little something about myself. There's an idea of vertical and horizontal thinkers. Vertical thinkers are very orderly. They like agendas. They're very much like this. And horizontal thinkers are all about just exploration. I'm that guy. And I don't like rules. I mean, I'm okay with rules. I think of rules as suggestions. I'm glad that somebody thought about some rules, but I'm always thinking of what are some alternatives to that. When we play board games, my wife hates it because she's very vertical. Somebody put some thought into how this game is to be played. Let's follow that. And I'm always going, well, what if we did this? What if we did that? When it comes to bedtime stories, the words on the page for me are like a straitjacket. I can't just read the words on the page. So some of the things that we do that's different is we will do interactive storytelling. If I'm reading, it'll be voices, and it'll be whatever we can do to make that, to amplify that time. If I'm going to read you a book, let's read the book and make it memorable. If I'm making up stories, then it's a little different. Sometimes I will interact with, I'll be saying the story, but then I'll stop and I'll point to a child and they'll have to fill in what's next. He met a person named, and those go crazy, and the kids love them. Another one in my family is, I have 5 daughters and 2 sons, and my 5 daughters, when they were younger, they always liked stories, and it always involved the princess. Princesses are great, but I like a good dragon. So my stories always had a princess and a dragon, and the ending is always the same. The dragon eats the princess. Now, the challenge for me was, how do I get there? Because the kids were always looking for it. How is that dragon going to eat the princess? Because I'm a boy, and my son, his stories are dragons, princes, and ninjas. There's always a ninja in there. That's something that's us. That is, you know, dad being dad. Princesses and dragons, bedtime stories, the dragon eats the princess. Maybe some people do that, but that's something that's unique to us that we do. That's me trying to be different, but trying to be different in a way that is memorable and adds value so that they know, hey, this is our thing. One of the things in the church is that the church always provides a lot of programs. They do a lot of the thinking for you and they put stuff down. For example, you have a priesthood session and people get together to do ice cream or something like that. It's great. But if that doesn't respond to your child, if your child doesn't think, getting together for ice cream doesn't do it, what could we do? What could we do that gets you geared up for priesthood session, right? Don't get locked into the way things are, the way things are done. Think about, how can I make it personal, make it specific? How can I be different? All right. Have you had any success trying to switch things up in your homes, trying to be different? It doesn't require, you don't have to be some crazy creative person to do it, but what ways have you tried to be different, to be unique to your family? Any thoughts? Right here.
We bought a farm about 6 years ago, and we let each child manage and care for an animal of their choice.
Wow.
It was quite the adventure.
What animals did you end up?
Pigs, chickens, rabbits, goats.
No ostriches or anything?
No ostriches.
Ducks, cows.
Like, thank you for keeping it in the realm of normal stuff, right? You have bees too? Oh, very nice. I was reminded of another thing that we did. So in the primary proclamation, it says preside, provide, and protect. And I take the providing seriously. Try to bring in as much as we can, but then also to spend wisely and to not waste what we have. I remember my kids had this, we got this new card game. It was a matching game. And we were making up a new version of Slapjack, you know, the game where you flip the cards over and then you hit the pile of cards and the winner gets the pile. Well, I was a little disturbed about hitting the cards. We just got these. And if we're going to hit the cards, we're going to destroy those cards and it's not going to last 24 hours. So I had the great idea, well, let's not hit the cards, let's hit ourselves. So you can imagine, so if you got a match, the kids would hit themselves in the forehead. You can imagine my wife walking in, and we're flipping these cards, and she's watching her kids hit themselves in the forehead. Now, the good thing about that game is that it doesn't go on for very long, right, because people get a headache. But try to be different. Try to do something different with the time that you spend with your children, because if you do everything that everybody else does, it's easy for that to just fade away in the memory. Oh, yeah, we went and we did that. What can you do that's different about your time? I'll give you an example of, and again, this is just from my own experience, something about the use technology, being specific and being different. Last summer, my wife took all of my children and went out west, drove the van to California. And I was at home working, and if you spend time away from your family, you're wondering we can talk on the phone, but how can I have an impact with them from here beyond just talking on the phone? Because you know my children love the sweet sound of my voice, but sometimes they need a little more than that. So I devised this idea where I went around and tracked down some of their friends. And I had them each record a message. Hey, hope you're having a great time out west in California. And I took those messages and I recorded them and I took a picture of them. And I bundled up all of these pictures and mailed them as postcards out to my children who were staying with their grandparents out in California. On the postcard, on the back of it, was a QRC code, right? One of those black and white codes for scanning stuff. And they could take my wife's phone or their grandfather's phone and scan the QRC code on each of the photos and hear the message from their friend. So the picture on the card was their friend. The message on the back was not written, but I could scan it with my phone and I could listen to their friend saying, hey, we miss you. Hope you're having a great time. I use technology, right, in a different way, so that we could bridge that, and they could listen to that over and over again if they wanted to. I made it specific because I found their friends, and they got a very specific message. It wasn't just a, hey, this is Dad, how are you guys doing? So it was personal to them. And it was different. Well, I had never done that before, and I don't think they'd ever received anything like that before. Just to add one little more thing to it, each of the photos of their friend had me photobombing at some where in the background. So I might have been at the very end of a hallway or something peeking around the corner, and it became a little game to figure out where is Dad in this picture, because I did a photo bomb for each of them. So just something to say, look, I know that I am on the other side of the country, but I'm still thinking of you. Can I make that a moment that they're never going to forget? Right? I could send them a letter and a letter would be great. Right? What can I do to make it specific, make it personal? Can I make it different? So that moment, that time spent listening to the message or looking at the card becomes something now that has a lot of value and is in their memory. It's a way of saying, of Dad saying, I see you, I want to be around you, and this is my way of trying to let you know that I care about you even though we're separated. Okay. Yeah.
I'm not real good at being different or things like that. But as you were talking, I was thinking of my children. I have six kids, and the things they ask us to do again. Like,
yeah.
Do that again. And I was thinking about this, some of the stuff they ask for, and maybe everybody does this, I don't know, but they always bring it up. So, like, the storytelling, I will, not all six of them want to sit there and listen, so maybe four of them, I'll just ask, what's your favorite color, pick the food, pick an animal, pick a place, and then I'll make up a story that includes all four of those things. But I don't remember the story, and so they're like, because I just make it up. Tell the bean story again, and I'm going, I have no idea what you're talking about. It was a month ago. But they remember it. And then another thing that they ask for all the time is sometimes if we're going somewhere, it makes us late sometimes, but whoever yells shotgun and gets it in the front, I say, okay, you got to tell me how to get there. And we end up driving all over town. And the kids in the back are yelling, this is the wrong way. And I'm like, well, I'm only going where my navigator's telling me. And they want to do that all the time. Which you can't, because you'll be late to everything. And then something else that came to mind was, if oftentimes, if we're feeling patient, we'll have a contest for dinner. We're making hamburgers, so everybody makes their own.
Yeah.
And then mom and dad get to have a bite of everyone.
So is your concern that you're not being different enough? Because what you're telling me sounds like you're doing it right. Because they are wanting to have those experiences again.
I'm just trying to think about, are there things that they, and those are the things that can wind up they ask to do again. So I guess they are different. Maybe everybody doesn't do those. But, and they're not very creative. It's just make some food, but they love it.
If your children enjoy that time and they want to have that experience again, there's not going to be a measure here that says, well, that was a 7 on the creative scale or a 5, right? If your children remember and they say, hey, Dad, let's do that again, right? Then they've already remembered that. How many times are they asking you to do, the stuff they're not asking you to do again are the stuff that's already forgotten and it's gone. So whether you're asking them for their favorite this or that and you try to work it into the story, or you're reading a book and you try to, when I read an adjective, do something. I don't know. It's really limitless. It's really your effort to do it. And I honestly believe that if, as a parent, you are sincerely making an effort to connect with your children, then you will be supported. Now, you don't have to be, you know, some superstar, anybody, to deliver to your kids. But if you want to do something special for them, I think this, you are entitled to the help of the Spirit, and you'll get there. The idea of getting lost, honestly, that could be, if you're driving around and you get lost, you have just created a memory. Hey, remember that time we got lost, right? That's actually something that gets stored away, and it becomes more than just, I'm getting lost trying to get to work. It's, I'm getting lost and all my kids are here, and we were trying to get to here, and we ended up at this chicken farm or something. I mean, that kind of stuff is really powerful. So I think from what you said, it sounds like you're doing pretty good. But I did, with the youth, I did talk about a class on how to take any idea from ordinary to extraordinary. And that's called Tactical Creativity. I'm plugging a prior class. That's shameless of me. But there's really three simple steps. It's a method on how can I take an idea or reading a bedtime story, how can I twist that up and make it different. So if we have time at the end, I can address some of that.
I just thought of an idea. There are so many of these things, but we used to take the crumbs. Back when we used to eat box cereal, we used to take the powder at the bottom because the kids would fight over it. I said, you can't have that. That's pixie dust. And I would sprinkle it on the kids. And the ones that got the pixie dust, I would, like, make them fly. But, you know, the bottom of a cereal box, you can turn it out of anything.
That's right. I mean, you take something that is often thrown away, and you just turn it into something that becomes something more than just the residue of the cereal. I think it's fantastic. It's a way that we can magnify that, right? Normally, at the end of the cereal box is nothing. It's trash. Can I turn it into something? Can I make it something that my kids now resonate with. All right, the fourth one here is be deliberate. I'm calling this the daily morm, right? This is to set a goal, to say, look at your calendar each day and say, what do I have today? Do I have minutes? If I don't have minutes, maybe I'm going to focus on moments. And be deliberate about setting a goal with each of your children to say, what can I do to magnify whatever minutes I have with these children? If I don't have a lot of minutes, go for a moment. Go make something that is powerful for them. I'll give you a couple of examples of this. Something that I try to do with my kids is I have a daughter who is really, really affectionate. She, when I leave, she wants to give me a hug, and she wants to give me a kiss, and she wants to follow me out to the car and wave goodbye. Not all of my daughters are like that. This one's my favorite, though, because of that. And when I come home, she wants to give me a hug and give me a kiss. Now, if you've ever done this, you come home and your little one comes up to you, and they come up to you, and what happens typically? Right? They hug your leg. What happens if you go like this, and they come up to you, and you go down, and you give them a big embrace, and you give them a kiss back, and they're not kissing your kidneys, right? They're kissing your cheek. Now what you've done is that coming home has now become a moment that matters to that child, all because all you did was get down and you got on eye level with them. That's something that everybody can do. And when you're tired, you know, I understand. But be deliberate about it. Be looking for it. If you want to find it, you will find the ways. So make it the daily morm. Instead of the daily norm, the daily morm. A minute or a moment. What do I have? What did I do today? Yes?
Just super quick. We had a friend in our work say that their 17-year-old son had never given them a hug. And I just realized that, I don't know how it happened, that in our family the tradition began where they must have been very small, because we have all teenagers now. But we read scriptures, we say our family prayers, but then each person in the family goes around and hugs every person, and they, you know, I don't know, you or a kiss or whatever.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that's a fantastic way of, because you're going to set expectations, you're going to set for something that they look forward to, right? Be deliberate about it. I'm going to make this. I'm not just going to do it because the time is going to pass and, you know, we're going to get from point A to point B. What can I do to magnify that? What can I do to make this, make it theirs, make it ours, make it personal to them, right? Make it a moment that's memorable. And one of the challenges with this is making it consistent. So the idea of being deliberate is set a goal. Say, I'm going to do this every day. We had, my wife suggested that each week I take one of our children out for breakfast. And on Monday morning, I would take them out and we'd go somewhere and go for breakfast. And I remember my daughter, Erin, the first time I took her out, we're driving in the car and she's in the back seat. And I start asking her about her life. And I'm looking in the rearview mirror, and the color drained out of her face. And she said, wait, is that what this is? she felt trapped. I could see her looking for the exit. She felt like this was, dad has now imprisoned daughter. I'm going to feed you food, but I'm going to extract information. It's an interrogation with food. We got over that. But that's something that is now people look forward to. Yeah, we're going to go out for breakfast. And, you know, they only get, I've got, well, I'm not taking the little baby out to breakfast at this point, but my son, so I've got six children, meaning, look, I'm only going to take you out to breakfast once every 6 weeks. So it's not a lot of time. What can I do with the time I have to make that memorable? So be deliberate about it. Set a goal. Want it. Need it. The last thing I'm going to share with you is this fifth way is simply this. Say yes. This is really hard. This can be hard. No is so easy. No shuts down debate. No means no. It can be really hard to say yes at times. But if we practice saying yes, yes is the great enabler, right? When someone says, can you do this? And you say yes, maybe you don't know how you're going to do it. You're going to figure out. But now what you've done is you've given permission for something to happen. You have an opportunity to magnify that something, whatever it is, simply by giving it permission, by saying yes. It can be a really difficult thing to do because You know, for me, if I'm coming home and I'm tired and I am hungry, I don't necessarily want to say yes to help me do algebra or something, right? My mind may not be there. But what can I do by saying yes? What can I do to, maybe I don't do everything they want, right? But I say yes because I'm going to try and I'm going to put forth the effort to be there. Again, it's about, if I don't have the minutes, what can I do with the time I do have? How can I magnify that? How can I magnify that moment and really make it powerful? Now, one final thought here. These are the five ways that I am trying to do and have been trying for some time now to put into my own life. And I hope that you find value in doing those and can magnify the minutes and moments that you have with your children. One final thought. I did a really unscientific survey earlier in the week with the youth classes and with one of the adult classes. And I had asked, the kids, what role does your dad play in your homeschool? What do you think the number one answer was?
Nothing?
The principal? Principal, I thought, I gave them, I gave them four options, okay? Principal, teacher, counselor, support, and fun guy. I thought principal would be higher, and it wasn't. But it was 80% of the answers were the fun guy. I asked moms, what role do you want dad to play in your homeschool? What do you think the answer was? It was not fun guy, okay? It was support, right? In most homeschools, I would imagine, mom is the one leading the charge. Just if your family is in any way traditional, dad's off at work, mom's at home, mom is very much involved in the curriculum. I'm not going to ask you what your role is here. I would imagine it's very similar. Sometimes you're not there at all. Maybe it's you are the support role. In thinking about this, what ways can we magnify her time that is being spent? Right? This has been talking about dad's time or just any parent's time. But you go, you come back. Your spouse, your partner has expended a lot of energy and time. What can you do to magnify that that's already been done? I think of an example from the scriptures, Alma and Amulek preaching in the city of Ammonihah. And Alma goes first and says, you guys are wicked, you're going to die. He really lays it out. And they say to him, what, one guy? Just one guy? God would send one guy to give us this really important message. And then Amulek steps up. And Alma reinforces what Alma said. And then they're like, oh, okay, such that Zeezrom, one of the ones who was leading the charge against Alma and Amulek, ends up converting, is impacted by the power of two. Think of the law of witnesses. In your household, and I know that situations may be different for each family, but there are two. And if mom is leading the charge for the homeschool, doing all of the planning, a lot of the curriculum, dad, you can reinforce that. You can be the Amulek that comes in behind and really supports what she is trying to do. And I think that's one of the ways that we can really magnify her time, right? For me, I have sometimes come in behind my wife and undone. I undid what she did, and I didn't realize it because I didn't communicate with her. Ouch, that is a hashtag homeschool dad fail. Right, we don't want to undo what someone has spent a whole lot of time doing. I would share another example with you, but it's being recorded, and my wife wouldn't appreciate me saying this terrible thing that I did. But I want to share this one quote here to end here. This is from a professor of sociology at Rutgers University, and it's long, so bear with me here. I don't think I put it up on. Maybe I did put it on the screen. Okay, so yeah, it's very long. Fathers are far more than just second adults in the home. Involved fathers bring positive benefits to their children that no other person is as likely to bring. They provide protection and economic support in male role models. They have a parenting style that is significantly different from that of a mother. Dads, for instance, love their children more dangerously. Do we not? We do that. That's because they play rougher and are more likely to encourage risk-taking. They provide kids with a broader diversity of social experiences, introduce them to a wider variety of methods. I'm going to skip down. Encourage competition, engendering independence. Mothers promote equity, creating a sense of security. Dads emphasize conceptual communication. Moms major in sympathy, care, and help. Dads tend to see their child in relation to the rest of the world. Moms tend to see the rest of the world in relation to their child. This is teamwork, right? This is dad can bring this, mom can bring this, and together we can have a really fantastic impact on the children. Because ultimately, at the end of your life, what's going to value to you, what's going to mean the most to you, is what your children have become. That's what's going to matter most. It's not going to be a question of things you collected or things you did, awards you received. It's going to be, did I impact my children becoming? Are they a disciple of Christ? Are they, you know, do they have children? Are we? Is this a generational impact because of your involvement? This particular quote, though long, I think really helps to emphasize that this is a tag team effort where you can magnify the minutes that you have, take the moments that you have, if it's only moments, and punch them up, okay? Use technology to shift time. That's one of the biggest problems that we have with homeschools is the time it takes. Be specific, okay? Be different, be deliberate, and say yes wherever you can. I appreciate the opportunity to talk. We have maybe a couple moments left. Are any thoughts or questions in parting?
What are the three steps?
Any idea, here's the process. The first thing that you want to do is, creativity is defined as the following. It's connecting ideas in an unexpected and meaningful way. The first thing you need to do is identify the box. Think of that phrase, creativity, thinking outside the box. The box is really important. It's not there to hold you down and be a terrible thing for you. The box is how you determine if something is unexpected, and the box helps you understand if it's meaningful. So identify the box, their constraints. If you're trying to do something with your children, you want to understand what do they like, what do they do, what do they not like. Understand them, because if it's going to be meaningful to them, you have to understand what is meaningful to them. The second thing is to take your idea and break it down. You can't take a general concept and just give it a wrench and really arrive at something that's unique, because every concept has a whole bunch of other concept built into it. Think of the idea of a party. I want to throw a creative party. Well, what's a party? A party is food, games, people, could be music, could be all kinds of things. You need to break the party down into the different things, make it smaller and smaller. What's a game? Are we winning? Are we losing? Is it a board game? Is it an athletic game? What's the objective? So you break it down into as many little pieces as you can, and you twist those pieces. So step three is you're going to reassemble. You're going to twist by asking, what if? What if? What if? I'm going to look at this backwards, upside down, forwards. What if the object of the game is not to win? What if the object of the game is to lose? We're going to play a game. Everyone wants to win, but what if your whole purpose is to lose? What if is a really powerful question to determine what I'm going to do with what I have. So identify the box. The box will help you find where the meaning is and if it's unexpected. Break down whatever your general idea is. We're going to read a bedtime story. Well, what is that? Well, that's a book. There's words, there's story, there's characters, there's dialogue. You know, you can break that down into pieces. What can I do differently with the dialogue? What can I do differently with the words? Well, words on a page are not just words on a page. They're adjectives, they're nouns, there's you just keep breaking it down and twist those individual things. So then step three is you reassemble and you put it back together. So I took something, a big thing, I broke it down, I found ways to tweak it, and I put it back together. I have a party, I have a creative party because I tweaked a couple things underneath the umbrella of the whole idea of party. But if you sit there and try to go, oh man, I gotta rack my head around a creative birthday party, right? It's gonna be hard because a party means so many things. All right, that was 30 seconds of three steps on how to get to create. And if you get that one, there's some habits that will make it easier, make it quicker. So I appreciate the time. I hope you guys have a fantastic rest of the homeschool conference. So thank you.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.